So these are my objectives, but loosely, you know, that's what I'm going to talk about, is that my experience in global health and what I've learned and what I think are important things that I'd like to pass on. I don't have any disclosures. So as Dr. Ivanoff said, I have been working with Partners in Health for the last almost 3 years now. Before that, I was working a traditional nurse's job in a busy urban center in Philadelphia. And it just wasn't a fit for me. So I think this will come in kind of in handy later in when I'm drawing my conclusions, because the work that I was prepped to do throughout nursing school was not the work for me. So Partners in Health is a Boston-based nonprofit organization. Our mission is to provide a preferential option for the poor in healthcare. So we work in 10 countries worldwide. We've been in Haiti the longest, about 25 years now. I worked in Rwanda for 2 years and then came back and went to Haiti for 4 months over the summer. So my work in Rwanda focused on nursing training. So that means that we had three large focus areas in Rwanda. I'll just point to them. So this is Rinkwavu. This is called Kayonza. They're both in the southeast of Rwanda, very rural districts. And Burera is located up here. Again, very, very rural. We started in 2005 with a mainly vertical program, infectious disease, focusing on HIV and tuberculosis. And that quickly bloomed into a primary care model that focuses on all spectrum, all sides of the spectrum. From, you know, we continue our infectious disease focus, but as well chronic care. So lots of heart disease, lots of diabetes, other infectious disease like malaria, maternal and child health is a big focus. All of this work is done in conjunction with the government of Rwanda. The government of Rwanda asked Partners in Health to come. And in conjunction with the Clinton Foundation, we do a lot of work in these three districts. The project has grown amazingly in a very short time because of the great working relationship we have with the government and the need and our experience in similar situations in Haiti. We had our model was very well established by early 2004, 2005 when we got to Rwanda. And so that's been the major factor for the amazing growth. So my major focus was nursing training. So all of these programs that we were rolling out, maternal child health, infectious disease, inpatient care of chronic diseases, outpatient care of chronic diseases, required, nurses make up a huge majority of the workforce in Rwanda. And so these nurses needed to be trained on the protocols that the Rwandan government was using, as well as the ones that we were kind of bringing to the table. And I really believed in their abilities because they've been doing it all along. So I was able to work side by side with these nurses and really understand the way that they have to approach their work, the challenges that they have, and hopefully give them the support that they need in order to feel better about what they're doing and be able to do it more efficiently so that more people can receive the benefit. So these are just two pictures I'm gonna show you. The one on the right, yes, the right, is the main entrance of the Rinkwavu Hospital, the first facility that we were working in 2005. And the one on the left, the bottom left, is the health center that's located quite nearby. The building that you see there is focused mainly on maternal and child health, so prenatal care, vaccinations. There's a pharmacy. There's child HIV care that's provided in that building. I think that the major thing that I wanted to show in these pictures is kind of one of the ways that Partners in Health expresses the dedication to social justice, in that it's very welcoming place. It's a very cool, under the shaded porch of the hospital. We strive to make it a place where people can come and feel that they're being taken care of in a dignified manner, and it's something that we take pride in. So Haiti. Haiti is the base of the kind of work of Partners in Health. It's before I went there, it was kind of like this mythical place where everyone draws their, you know, motivation for the work, and it, you know, people would come from the Boston office who worked with us for a long time to Rwanda, and they would talk about Haiti, and it was a little confusing to me, like, but we're working here. I mean, not that I felt neglected, but it was just that, you know, we're doing all these things here, and the program's growing, and we're getting so much great results and that sort of thing, but you're talking about Haiti. But after going, I understand a bit better. So January 12th just totally changed the whole game for Partners in Health. We worked for the past 25 years in the rural areas of Haiti. That's where all of our programs were developed and honed, and you know, all the research that we've done, that's where it started. But now, after the earthquake, which was centered close to Port-au-Prince, we've had to kind of change our approach and focus on a new way of working in an urban area. So there are kind of three large interventions that have occurred since the earthquake in Port-au-Prince that we've been working on. One of them is clinics based at spontaneous settlements within the city. So these are those camps that you've seen the pictures of, tents and tarps. You know, we call them spontaneous settlement because there's no one there establishing a camp. When we talk about internally displaced people, like in Sudan, and those camps are set up by an organization who says, put the houses here, put the food distribution here, put a clinic here. That's not what's happening in Haiti. This is people who were unable to go back to their homes and just decided that I'm going to live here on this spot of land, and whoever showed up at the same time is also living there. And so we've established clinics in some of those spontaneous settlements. There's like hundreds or thousands of them throughout the earthquake zone, where our Haitian colleagues go there to work every day. They provide primary care, women's care, infant and child care, psychosocial support, food, nutrition for malnourished children. The second post-earthquake focus for Port-au-Prince for Partners in Health was at the General Hospital, which I'm going to talk about a bit in a minute. And then the third, unfortunately, was about 3 weeks ago when cholera emerged. Partners in Health was already in the area where the cholera was, and so we've been working very closely with Doctors Without Borders to take care of all the patients. So there's been about 500 people that have died, and 3,500 that have been infected. And the recent hurricane has kind of renewed that threat given the water issue. So we'll see. We were hoping that after the earthquake that would be kind of the end, and of course we've had these two other hits. So my responsibility in Haiti was based at the University Hospital of Haiti, so the General Hospital. If you think about a small developing country in the major city, there's one government facility. That's what this is. And so it is the sole government public healthcare facility, the sole public hospital. So if any resident of Port-au-Prince that doesn't have money to pay a private doctor, a private hospital, this is the facility that they go to. And of course, that's the majority of the population. 60% of the buildings at the hospital were destroyed. When I was there in May, of course, nothing had been rebuilt. So the lab was located in a tent. The pediatric department was in a tent. The post-operative patients and pre-operative patients, they were all in tents. The tuberculosis patients were in a tent. The only things that were inside were the OR and the emergency room and the ICU. The blood bank was inside. There are a few little things, but 60% of the patients as well were being cared for in tents, so that gives you an indication. I think one of the major kind of emotional hits that came out of the earthquake related to the General Hospital was the fact that because it's a government facility, there's a medical school and a nursing school there, and the nursing school building was completely destroyed. And nursing school in Haiti is 3 years. And one of the classes of nurses was in class, and about 90% of the students died. And so in a year, there's going to be no new nurses available, much less that the nurses who weren't in school weren't able to go to school after. So I think that given the status of nurses in Haitian culture, this was a particularly difficult thing to absorb because people knew how valuable they are in the community. Partners in Health, as well as other organizations, had volunteer clinicians from the United States going to this hospital until about the 6-month mark. So taking care of patients in the wards, in the ER, in the ICU was volunteer clinicians. This was mainly because the Haitian staff was unable to come to work because their own family died, their house, there's no transportation, as well as issues like bureaucracy around getting paid, and the status of their job was unclear, and so people were unable to reliably come and take care of the patients. And after the earthquake, there's so much free care being given at the hospital as well as throughout the city that there were many, many, many patients coming to the hospital expecting to have free care, which was probably more than their normal amount of patients that they're taking care of at this hospital. And so there was a need for more nurses and doctors than there were before the earthquake anyway. So this is a picture of the intensive care unit that was taken about 6 months after the earthquake. You can see that it's night. We were working at night. The man in the center of the picture is an ER doc who came down and worked with me for 5 weeks. He had about 4 days off. He worked every night under conditions that I couldn't imagine, even after spending 2 years in Rwanda. It was no preparation. You can see across the top of the photo, there's those lights and cords. That's the electricity source. There's also oxygen tubing run across. We would have like 2 large oxygen tanks for about 20 patients, and we would just run connections. We weren't obviously taking care of what we would call severely ill patients here. They were very, very sick, but we had no ventilated patients. Under very, very rare circumstances, we had ventilated patients. The dialysis capability was very, very small, so we weren't taking care of very sick, like end-stage diabetics or that sort of thing either. We were taking care of a lot of malaria, a lot of typhoid, traumas, car accidents, bike accidents, or getting in fights, that sort of thing. You can see behind the doctor there's a fan because it was about 100 degrees every day. So what does all this leave me with? I'm still asking myself that question, so don't think that this is like the end of the end of it, but I have kind of 3 major things I want to share. The first big thing is about accompaniment. Accompaniment is a word that we at Partners in Health use to describe the act of standing with someone in their life, whether it be it started with HIV-infected patients, their community members standing with them in their disease, and making sure that they were able to meet the challenges that they faced. For me, it was standing with nurses in Rwanda while they're delivering a baby who, you know, had been in labor for 20 hours or something, and it just seemed like an impossible situation. Me being there, that's accompaniment. And I think that that act, that experience, has given me a way of measuring social justice, and by that I mean knowing what it is. I grew up in Virginia, a very middle-class upbringing, and my parents told me what it is right and wrong, and that's why I'm in this work. But that doesn't mean that much to a 20-something nurse until I've done it. And so I think that everyone here or anywhere can probably take something that they do and really internalize it and say, how does this affect the way that I will work tomorrow? Or how does this affect my understanding of the work I've been doing my whole life? And again, I think it's pretty clear that the benefits, you know, I learned from that nurse probably more than I taught her. But, you know, she knew I was serious because I was there experiencing with her. She was learning from me because I would talk about the risks of episiotomy or that sort of thing. And I was learning from her in that this is the only practice that she knows. For me, it was like a learning experience every day, but for her, it was the very first day of her practice. Another thing I kind of learned was understanding better why I chose to do the work that I do. There's a strong history of social justice in nursing. We all learn about it. But I think it's a little bit unclear to a 20-year-old nursing student what it really means, what the extent of it is, like under you know, what realms of my life does this apply to. You know, there was a really great, actually, presentation earlier today that a nursing professor from Minnesota gave about how she teaches social justice to undergraduates. And it was all about being socially involved, learning how to vote, and going to the Capitol for Nurses Day and that sort of thing. And I think that as a educator, that was a great kind of thing for me to learn, and that's a goal of something that my professors were trying to teach me. And I think for young students, or young nurses, or me, it's really beneficial to critically think about what it means to me and apply that to my job, because it increases my job satisfaction exponentially. You know, there were many, many not fun days in Haiti, but because I know the reason why I was there, it will continue to serve me today and tomorrow and forever. And then the last thing is just about collaboration. And this specifically, I'm meaning like inter-nursing collaboration as opposed to like collaborating with physicians, because we do that really well, I think, a lot of us. But for global health, nurses working in global health, there's like a smallish community, I think, of people that fall into the category like me. Like, I'm not a PhD student, and you know, I've worked it's not been short stints during school and that sort of thing. And I don't actually come across people that often that do that, but I know that they're there. It's just, there's not a good forum for that. And I think there's been a slow shift within the profession from the individual application of social justice to the population aspect that, like, public health nursing is kind of pushing as social justice becomes more of a thing now in the past like 10 years or something. There's been a slower shift among the people who are writing literature about public health nursing, or people who are learning it, to understand that population level social justice applications are really important, and there are people like me who really are like hungry for them. I think I obviously worked in a very specific situation where I was in a vacuum. There weren't a lot of nurses around, and the organization I worked for is affiliated to a school that doesn't have a nursing school, so that's also a little bit of a limiting factor. But regardless, there's definitely a place there for a lot of growth. I put one source up here because I think it is a really good one. It's a Global Health Nursing and Midwifery listserv, basically, that a lot of people use. It's administrated through Harvard School of Public Health and this project called the Global Health Delivery Online. So what are my conclusions? I'm still thinking of them. I only got back from Haiti about 2 months ago. But I think that major conclusions are that accompaniment will continue to be a big part of my practice, and I think that it's an important practice to teach other people, your colleagues, your students, your teachers, whoever. And I learned so much from my Rwandan and Haitian colleagues, and I think that without their help, I wouldn't have ever really gotten anything out of it. And I think that that applies to everyone as well. Just kind of working in a team, that's basically what we were doing. And so everyone does that every day. I think that's it. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Emily. Are there questions for Emily? Emily, I think you're going to have some questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
There are a lot of opportunities. I will say that they're hidden. you know, there's not a clear path. Physicians, maybe there's a clearer path, but for nurses, it's not as a clearer path. I would say that there are hundreds of small NGOs who need you, who are like being run by other other development majors or this or that, who need a health professional to provide a little bit of information to support their projects. And so this lies on you to find people who are doing work that you're interested in and say to them, you know, you might not be able to expect pay at first. Like, I can give you 6 months and I can work on XYZ, and at the end, this is what I can give you, and it'll help you in this way. I think making it really, the outcome really clear to someone who, it's obviously, if you know, they're working in Guatemala, health is going to be a thing in most situations, but it might need to be kind of spelled out to them. There are, you know, the major organizations, they have interest in working with nurses. It might not be as a nurse, but the value of the education is there just the same. Yeah. Sure. Yeah?
Just a personal question. As a nurse myself, yeah, who's been living in, working in rural Malawi for the last almost 4 years.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how you're finding the transition back to the U.S., the kind of reverse culture shock. That,
yeah.
Much more difficult coming back than it ever was to fighting,
yeah,
to make that choice, yeah, and so to go.
So part of my standard answer to that question is that I came back and forth. I wasn't like in a Peace Corps situation where it was like dropped off and then never, you know, don't see another white person. That wasn't the situation that I was in. So it was a little bit different. But I will say that some days I'm just like, I cannot talk about the weather with you today. That's not on my agenda. So I think it's really difficult. When I returned from Haiti, I read this kind of like very famous book about the history of Haiti called The Comedians. And there's a line in the book that is something to the effect of, I could feel the indifference of the world towards Haiti all around me. And that's really, sometimes that's, I'm like encompassed by that feeling periodically. Just that, it's just, you've seen things that people can't imagine seeing, and there aren't really words to describe it. Yeah.
I'm just curious, the role that you played in Rwanda, mm-hmm, how is that going to be applied to Haiti? Are you going to be, like, what's the vision of nursing and training nursing in?
Yeah. So I actually am finished in Haiti. I'm not there like for any amount of time. I was there to do a specific task, and that's ended now. But actually tomorrow there's a session about nursing education in Haiti that my colleague is giving, who's sitting behind you. I also would say that my experience in Haiti was very, very narrow and focused on this one thing. And so there's a lot of questions even about the work of Partners in Health in Haiti that I have no idea what it is. So The broad answer is that nursing education in Haiti has a lot of work to do, and there's a lot of people supporting it. Within Partners in Health work in Haiti, there's a lot of people doing nursing training. It's our kind of our biggest focus place, and so there's a lot of doctors and ancillary staff, like nurses and midwives and physical therapists that spend time there, and they all train nurses. It's a big part of everyone's job. Yes?
So where will you be going next, and what will you be doing?
I am looking to be based in Boston, doing community family practicing. Yep. Just seeing patients and then going home and having a little life separation. Me personally, we had such a beneficial relationship with the government that it was almost professionally a non-issue because it would hinder the work to make any kind of statement about what was going on. There's been a lot of news lately relating to the ruling party in Rwanda being authoritarian and that sort of thing. And I would say, personally, I experienced some of that. I saw it happening. But it was not professionally an issue that we delved into. I think that for Rwanda specifically, it's a bit, any change in that is far out. And so we can plug along daily on the health goal without kind of feeling like it'll all come crashing down or something in this near future. In Haiti, it's very complicated. And I think that the founder of Partners in Health is very interested in providing as much support to the government as is he's able to do, while keeping an eye on our specific kind of social care and health and the social determinants of health and that sort of thing. There's a risk involved regarding our supporters if any kind of like broad statements are made or sides are taken or whatever, that sort of thing. So it's something we think about a lot. Yeah.
Before you go to countries like Rwanda, do you get any kind of preparation how to get there, how to deal with the people, mm-hmm. culture-wise, mm-hmm. and what language do they speak? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If it's not English.
Mm-hmm. So I had actually, before I moved to Rwanda for this job, I'd been to Rwanda before working on a different project for a short time, so I learned a lot then. And I'd also been in Malawi for some time. And so I was like culturally competent in the way that you're like kind of open to whatever happens and treading lightly on certain issues and that sort of thing. But everyone makes mistakes, I think, yeah. It's difficult. The majority of the population in the area that I was living in Rwanda speak a language called Kinyarwanda, which is similar to what's spoken in Burundi and Uganda. It's a very difficult language to learn, and I've learned very little. Because my job was mostly working with nurses, as opposed to providing patient care, I spoke French with nurses because that was the main language at the time. It's since switched to English, but it was a Francophone country, and so I communicated in French with those nurses and English. Many of them were educated in Uganda and they spoke English. Thank you.